This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. As we head into summer, things are starting to heat up, and we're not just talking about the weather. The number of Republicans vying for their party's presidential nomination is growing each month. Meantime, many Democrats are hoping there are other candidates who will step up and challenge Hillary Clinton. Political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson are here to look at how the presidential primary fields are shaping up and check out the rest of the political news. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken and Howard, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Howard.
Hey, Ken.
Now, Ken, I pinky swear I have not given the answer to Howard. So we want to know what the trivia question is today, and Howard is just as much in the dark as everybody else.
Okay, the trivia question is, who is George Pataki? that's not the trivia question. The trivia question is, who was the last presidential candidate who also ran for governor, mayor, congressman, and senator?
Well, if you think you know the answer to that, give us a call, 513-419-7100. You could be the winner of a Political Junkie button. And again, it's the question was, who was the last presidential candidate who also ran for mayor, governor, House, and Senate? 513-419-7100. Now, Howard, the re-canvass in the Kentucky GOP governor's primary race between Matt Bevin and James Comer, that got underway today. Do we know the results yet? Have they finished that up?
No, it's not finished yet. I mean, it's, you know, there's 120 counties in Kentucky, and they each have to do another printout of their election night results and make sure they match up with what they gave the Secretary of State on election night. So far, from what I've seen, there's no change. On election night, it was 83 votes in favor of Bevin over Comer out of over 214,000 cast. And I don't expect it to change. I don't expect it to change at all with this re-canvass, because that's just, the technology is just not, you know, doesn't have that many flaws in it.
Yeah, and all they're really doing is just verifying that the vote was done correctly.
It was done correctly on election night.
So, doesn't Comer still have another option? You can ask for a recount.
Yes, I mean, say, you know, if he picked up a few votes or something in this re-canvass, he could theoretically ask for an official recount, which would actually involve the counting of some votes in some precincts. But, you know, I think that the likelihood of that is pretty remote.
Yeah, if I understand correctly, I think in Kentucky the candidate would have to pay for that recount, so might come down to money.
Right.
Ken, you know, I keep hearing that this Kentucky governor's race is going to be a bellwether for 2016. Do you think that's a pretty good assessment of that race?
I actually don't. And the reason I don't is because no matter what's going on in the country, Republicans don't win the governorship of Kentucky. I mean, they won it with Ernie Fletcher in the 90s. Yeah. And they won it with Louis Nunn in 1967. And that's it for the last 7,000 years, or at least since World War II.
That's right.
I mean, so whatever happens in Kentucky, people say, well, you know, the Democrats win it. Now, the weird thing is that this time the Republicans really thought they had a shot at it. Obviously, Mitch McConnell reigns supreme over the state. And, you know, as much as Republicans win in federal races like the Senate, I think Wendell Ford was the last Democrat to win in Kentucky, but they just can't win the governorship. And Matt Bevin, and we know about the relationship between Mitch McConnell and Matt Bevin. Of course, we also know about the relationship between Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul. He's not having a good time with his pals lately in Kentucky. But you know, I mean, Kentucky is fascinating. It's one of the only three states to have gubernatorial elections this year. But as far as the bellwether, I don't think so.
So what happens in Kentucky is going to stay in Kentucky in this case.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Well, yeah, probably so. I mean, you know, the ultimate irony of this thing is that a year ago, Matt Bevin was this, you know, off-the-wall outsider who was trying to challenge, you know, Mitch McConnell and getting nowhere. And now they have to, the Kentucky Republican Party, it would appear, is going to have to live with him as their candidate for governor of the Commonwealth of Kentucky.
But let me just say one thing about this. I mean, once upon a time, Rand Paul was the off-the-wall, sure loser against the Republican establishment, Trey Grayson, in 2000, backed by Mitch McConnell, and yet Rand Paul won it. So, I mean, stranger things have happened, but I don't remember the enmity that there is between Bevin and McConnell.
There's quite a bit, and, you know, the party itself, I mean, I think it's pretty well divided among these, you know, three different camps.
Yeah, and something else, can you know, get your assessment on this, too. I think that the New York Times had this as a headline that the Kentucky GOP was in disarray. You think that's what we're really seeing here?
Well, I mean, they didn't get their preferred candidate, but of course, the front runner had his own problems, personal problems with accusations, and that wasn't helping the party either. You still have McConnell having trouble with the Senate. He's having trouble with Rand Paul and government surveillance and the renewal of the Patriot Act, and that's, you know, a little problem too. But as far as, you know, winning elections, you know, that's what it's all about, really. And as we see in the Senate, you know, Rand Paul may not be the next president, but he's certainly heavily favored to win a second term next year. And so I think disarray may be a little strong, but they're certainly disappointed what's going on in the governor's race.
We got to talk about John Kasich a little bit. You know, it looks like sometime in late June or early July, he's going to make an official announcement that he's going to seek this Republican nomination. He's still nowhere in the polling. I mean, if you look at the national polling, he's down there, you know, 2% with Carly Fiorina and others. I don't see how does he break through?
Well, see, here's the thing. In the past, you could say, well, yes, he's only 1-2%, but a lot of people start off as 1-2%.
Yeah.
Jimmy Carter was Jimmy Who for the longest time.
Right.
George McGovern was nobody, you know, when he first announced in 1971. But the problem is that we have a debate coming up on August 6th when a lot of people who have not heretofore been paying attention to the race will start tuning in. And Fox is having this debate on August 6th, and they said, well, look, with 16, 17, 75 candidates possibly running, they have this new criteria that they're going to take the average of 5 national polls, and they will only include the top 10 candidates. Now, that's not the way I would do it. I mean, I don't know how to do it, and I guess I could come up with some ideas, but I think when you start excluding half the field, I mean, let's just think of it. John Kasich is the governor of one of the biggest states and most important states of the country, a two-term governor, a former House Budget Committee chairman, and he may not make the top 10, but Donald Trump will? I mean, so there are so many things here that are just so bizarre that I think Fox needs to rethink of what it's doing.
And Fox is going to hold this in his state, in Cleveland.
Right, where the Republican National Convention will be, right?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it is crazy.
Hey, Ken, if we're going to ask about Kasich and speaking of governors who might run, what about Chris Christie? Is he any closer to declaring?
Well, the people who, I mean, I don't know, but the people who say they know him says he's still on track to run. I think, obviously, the indictment of two of his former close friends and the guilty plea by a former aide as well in that George Washington Bridge traffic tie-up that was done at a political peak. I mean, while it seemed just so stupid and pointless, it really has slowed down Christie's momentum, and he had a lot of momentum coming into 2015 as chairman of the Republican Governors Association, a big re-election in 2013, but a lot of his money people have deserted him. A lot of them have gone to Jeb Bush. I mean, he's just, you know, he says he's on track to doing it, and he's still spending a lot of time in places like New Hampshire giving well-received speeches, but who knows? I mean, my guess is his time has come and gone, but who knows, right?
Yeah, it's hard to see. I mean, if he takes any more body blows with these bad stories, I mean, I don't see how he can survive any of that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if he can survive it right now, right. But I think he's just, you know, stunned at the turn of events because, I mean, he, you know, like all these candidates, they look in the mirror and they see the next president of the United States. But for many reasons, Christie had, there was legitimacy to it because a lot of people saw him as the front runner, which is so ridiculous 2 years in advance. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the fact that he tells Democrats to, you know, sit down and shut up, and a lot of Republicans say, you know, they like that kind of moxie. I always felt that it was a kind of an act that would wear thin ultimately, but, you know, Christie, you know, he has a style that is not matched by many of the other candidates.
Yeah, it's interesting too, Ken, because you have Hillary Clinton, all these allegations swirling around her, and she seems to be, you know, it doesn't seem to be affecting her that much at this point. Chris Christie, on the other hand, you know, he seems to be getting pummeled by all this. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, there's a big difference between allegations and an indictment. And, of course,
that's
if Hillary
true.
Clinton
yeah.
was indicted for something, then right. things would change. But all the frustrations that Democrats had with Ronald Reagan, that he was the Teflon president, that nothing would stick to him, whereas the Republicans feel that about Hillary Clinton. You have, you know, Benghazi, for better or worse. You have the email gate where she suddenly said, I'm going to decide what emails people can see. And then, of course, all those contributions to the Clinton Foundation and whether there was any quid pro quo with Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State. But if you look at the polls, if you look at the Democratic polls, that hasn't changed at all. It hasn't eroded her status at all. She's still 65-68% in every Democratic poll. And you just, you know, Republicans say, how is this possible? But I guess Democrats said that about Reagan as well.
This morning I saw, I think, what was the most bizarre story I've seen in this cycle yet. Daily Mail of London and their interview of Paula Jones, who had sued Bill Clinton for sexual harassment when he was governor. And they interviewed her, and she said, Hillary Clinton cannot be trusted. And even Politico picked up the story. Paula Jones?
Yeah, well, it's like talking like Jennifer Flowers. What do you think about
right.
Bill Clinton?
What do you think about, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of, oh, well.
Okay. Yeah, that is rather bizarre. Ken.
It was very bizarre.
That's a good description of it. Well, we will continue with political junkie Ken Rudin after this, and we'll also get to your answers for Ken's trivia question. If you'd like to join the conversation, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. We're talking all things political with Ken Rudin and WVXU's Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's get to that trivia question. So the question was, who was the last presidential candidate who also ran for mayor, governor, House, and Senate? And David in Madisonville, what do you think?
I think it's Dennis Kucinich.
Okay. Nope, it wasn't. Good guess, but nope, it wasn't. Let's
right,
try
it. I was going to say Dennis Kucinich never ran for governor and never ran for senator, but of course he was mayor and congressman.
Yes.
Hey, David, thanks for the try there. Peter in Green Hills, who do you think it was?
Rudy Giuliani.
Ken?
Well, Rudy Giuliani never ran for the Senate, although he thought about it against Hillary Clinton in 2000, never ran for governor, and never ran for Congress.
Okay. Nice try, Peter. Let's try Craig and Kenwood. Craig, who do you think it was?
Martin O'Malley.
Martin O'Malley, of course, was former mayor of Baltimore. He was governor of Maryland, but never ran for the House or Senate.
Okay. Gray and Clifton, give it a try there. Who do you think it was?
I'm going to guess Birch Bayh of Indiana.
Okay. Ken?
Well, the only thing Birch Bayh ever ran for besides president was senator of Indiana. He never ran for governor or Congress or mayor.
Okay. So far, everybody's been stumped on this one. So, again, the question was, who was the last presidential candidate who also ran for mayor, governor, House, and Senate? If you think you know the answer to that, give us a call at 513-419-7100. If you get the answer right, you'll win a political junkie button. So give it a try. Whether you really know or not, just give it a try.
Give
right?
it a try. Yeah. Give it a shot. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Ken, what do you think about Rick Santorum announcing his run? And then he turns around, he does an interview with George Stephanopoulos.
Well, yes. Well, you know, George Stephanopoulos has, you know, I mean, when he's not giving money to the Clinton Foundation, he has time to be ABC anchor. No, that's a cheap shot. There was a lot of question whether there would be some kind of punishment by ABC, but I don't think what he did was anything egregious. Of course, he certainly should have told people that he had given to the Clinton Foundation while he's doing interviews about it. Yes. But Rick Santorum's interesting. When you look at the history of the Republican Party, it's usually the guy who finishes second in one cycle is the front runner of the next cycle. I mean, that's what happened with George Bush when he lost to Reagan, and then he was the front runner in 88. That's what happened with John McCain, who lost to Bush in 2000, became the front runner the next time. Mitt Romney, Bob Dole, all these guys ran for president and for the nomination, lost, and then came back and won the nomination the next try. Rick Santorum was the number two guy to Mitt Romney in 2012. He won the Iowa caucuses by, I think, 84 votes or something like that. And of course, or 24 votes, actually. And I don't think he was announced as the winner until weeks later, which always bothered him because he never got any momentum out of it. But he won at least 10 or 11 primaries in 2012. And yet, that's in 2012. It sounds so long ago. I mean, we're talking about, you know, George Pataki, who last ran for governor in 1066. But I mean, here you have like Rick Santorum, who you know, was only 4 years ago was the runner-up, and yet he seems like yesterday's news to a lot of Republicans.
He was the runner-up, but I mean, even when he was the last man standing, I mean, he was badly wounded. I mean, there was just no way he was going to make it.
True.
And he refused to drop out.
Well, no, actually, he dropped out earlier than Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich,
And maybe, you know, it's just a perception thing on my part. Maybe it's just age on my part. It seems like he's been running forever, but I could be wrong about that. How many years has he been trying now?
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. For the presidency, yes.
And, of course, the last time he won anything was in 2000 when he was reelected to a second term in the Senate and from Pennsylvania. But he lost his seat to Bob Casey in 2006. Sure. So he's been out of office since 2007. And again, you know, I mean, when you have a look at the field, this is a very impressive, whatever you think about the numbers involved, and that's besides the point, you do have a lot of impressive candidates running for the nomination for 2016. You have senators, you have governors, you have people who've been in office a long time and with a lot of a long resume and a lot of qualifications. And unlike, you know, years ago when not that many people would get involved, either they think that the nomination is worth it in 2016 or they just feel there's absolutely no front runner to block them out. So what do I have to lose by trying?
Do you think Santorum might have pigeonholed himself as just the candidate of the religious right?
Well, that's interesting because that's all he talked about 4 years ago.
4 years ago, yes.
And he's not talking about that now in his announcement yesterday. I mean, all he talked about was economic opportunity. I don't mean all he talked about because that's an important issue. But he talked about economic opportunity and then that that the Republicans shouldn't discount, you know, reaching out to other voters to make their make a larger electorate. But he didn't talk about the hot button social issues that he was famous for in 2012.
He probably understands now. I mean, you cannot win the nomination with just that segment of the Republican vote.
True, but that's not stopping other Republicans from trying. Ted Cruz. Exactly.
I know.
And Ken, you know, as much as people might try to pigeonhole the GOP as a bunch of middle-aged white guys, you're right. The list of candidates, it's pretty diverse this time around.
Well, I mean, you do have Carly Fiorina, the former head of Hewlett-Packard, who ran for the Senate in California in 2010. I mean, she's running, and you have Ben Carson, the former doctor, who is running for his first campaign. But it'll be interesting because if, let's just say that Carly Fiorina doesn't make the top 10, and I assume she won't make the top 10 in that Fox criteria for the debate, then you, once again, you either have 10 white, you certainly have 10 guys on the stage. If Ben Carson doesn't make it, you have 10 white guys. And that's, you know, a big difference what you'll see on the Democratic side.
You know, speaking of Carly Fiorina, she's been showing up a lot at the same places as Hillary Clinton, Columbia, South Carolina, most recently. And she says she's not shadowing Clinton, but this makes me wonder that even if she isn't successful in the primaries, if she's going to just stay in this role as a thorn in Hillary's side.
Well, she is spending a lot of her time attacking Hillary Clinton. I mean, that's also basically she's doing. And then, and of course, it gives her the, you know, she can say, well, I'm not sexist because I'm a woman, so I can say these things about Hillary Clinton. For the most part, other Republicans are really focusing their ire on each other. Lindsey Graham, basically, when he announces next week, the senator from South Carolina, he's going to run and basically run against Rand Paul for his foreign policy. Yeah. A lot of candidates are running against Jeb Bush because Jeb Bush still doesn't have to answer the fact whether the war in Iraq was a good thing or not. I mean, how could you not be prepared for that question? So she's, Cauley Fiorina seems to be the only one who's focusing exclusively on Hillary Clinton.
Is that kind of an audition for vice president, you think?
Not, you know, I can't imagine somebody saying, look, for whatever you think about Cauley Fiorina's tenure at Hewlett-Packard, mm-hmm. I can't imagine, just as a savage Mitt Romney's business credentials in 2012, to say that here, well, let's put Cauley Fiorina on the ticket, who fired 30,000 people as chairman of Hewlett-Packard, and whose tenure the stock went down dramatically. I don't think that's what you want to have on the ticket.
It's not a good starting point, no.
No, and there are other women. There's Kelly Ayotte, the senator from New Hampshire. There's Susana Martinez, the governor of New Mexico. There are other women if you're looking to go that route. But, you know, first you have to pick a nominee, and that may not happen for a long time.
Let's see if we have some folks who might know the answer to the earlier trivia question. Stuart and Mason, who do you think it was, Stuart?
How about good old Hubert Humphrey?
Well, Hubert Humphrey was mayor of Minneapolis, and of course he was a senator, but never ran for governor, never ran for the House.
Let's see. Bob and Dayton, who do you think?
By the way, don't forget Rubio, the Latino candidate of the finals. But
Absolutely.
My choices, and I remember my second thoughts, was Jerry Brown.
Well, Jerry Brown was mayor of Oakland, and he was governor, and he did run for the Senate in 1982, lost to Pete Wilson, but he never ran for the House. That was a very good guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get John in Covington. Give it a try here.
Yes. Hi. Good afternoon. I am going to change my initial guess, and I'm going to guess Ed Rendell.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I'm going to stop you right away because Ed Rendell never ran for president. I mean, he was the former governor of Pennsylvania, never ran for anything else, and he didn't run for president. He would have liked to have been president, but you know, so would Howard. But, you know, you got to run for it.
And who was your initial guess, John?
John Anderson.
Fond memories of John Anderson from my college days, yes.
Right,
but nope,
John
not the right answer.
And John Anderson only ran for the House from Illinois, not governor or senator.
Yes.
Political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson join us this afternoon as we look at how the presidential primary fields are shaping up, as well as the rest of the day's political news. Thanks to David Gaines for listening to 91.7 WVXU today. And let's see here. Linda in Sharonville, who do you think it was?
Well, I wondered about Nixon.
Okay, Ken?
Well, Nixon did run for governor. He was in the House. He was a senator, but he was never mayor.
That's what I wasn't sure of.
Yeah. No, okay. Never mayor.
Okay. And let's see. Winnie in East Walnut Hills, what do you think the answer
is? I think it's Bernie Sanders.
Bernie, the guy who's running now? Bernie Sanders is the correct answer.
Yay!
Well, I thought so.
Bernie Sanders.
Very good. Way to go, Winnie.
Bernie Sanders, when he was this radical gadfly Liberty Union candidate, ran for governor of Vermont several times. He usually get 1 or 2%, but he was elected mayor of Burlington. So he ran for governor. He was elected mayor of Burlington, elected to the House in 1990, and elected to the Senate in 2006. So he got them all. Hmm. It's Bernie Sanders.
And I hope he takes the presidency.
You're endorsed by Winnie. That's a good sign. Winnie, thank you very much. Congratulations. Stay on the line. Pete Reitmeier is going to get your information where we can send your prize to. So very good job.
Oh, good. Thanks.
And if you'd like to join our political conversation today, again, the phone number is 513-419-7100.
Yeah, you whipped me today, Ken.
Isn't that something, I love that Winnie got it, but it was so interesting that nobody thought of Bernie Sanders.
Yeah,
they,
I know.
They're coming up with these great guesses.
They
John
were.
John Anderson. Yeah.
Dennis Kucinich.
I'll tell you who I wrote down was Richard Lugar.
Wait, I just thought of somebody else who ran for governor.
Uh-oh.
Senator. But we're talking about The question was, who was the last? And the last is correct.
Oh.
I mean,
oh, okay.
But, but
okay.
Governor, Senator, Congressman, and Mayor Sam Yorty of California.
Oh. Yes,
he
yes,
was.
Yes.
He was. He was mayor of Los Angeles.
True.
He was a congressman, ran for mayor several times, ran for governor several times, but he was not the last one to do that.
Right. A great trivia question.
It's amazing the stuff I learn on this show, usually from
very
me.
Good, very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. You know, we're talking about Bernie Sanders, the Hillary opposition.
Let's talk about Bernie.
Yeah. You know, Bernie Sanders is gearing up. He's been saying some interesting things out there. I mean, the comment he made the other day about the 90% marginal tax rate that existed during the radical Eisenhower years. I found that very interesting. And he's gotten some flack for saying that. But you know what? At least he's being honest.
Oh, the thing about Bernie Sanders, if there's anything, he's genuine and he's honest. And not only that, he's been saying the same things his entire political career. Yes. It's not that, you know, he was for the war, that he was against the war, or as John Kerry famously said, I voted for the $87 billion before he voted against it. I mean, he is absolutely committed to a position. And I think, if anything, the Democratic Party in some ways may be moving towards Bernie Sanders rather than Bernie Sanders moving towards the middle, because certainly, you know, issues of gay marriage, opposition to the war. If you go back not too long ago, I mean, almost every Democratic candidate was opposed to marriage defined as anything other than between a man and a woman. And you know where Hillary Clinton and others voted on the war in Iraq in 2002, 2003. So Bernie Sanders, you know, is very, very consistent.
Yeah, for decades. I mean, you can go back to, you know, the early 70s when he was writing for Mother Jones. I mean, he was saying the exact same things. He will always say the exact same things. He says what he believes, and he's stuck to it for all those years.
I mean, there's some people who are nervous about his age. I understand that he was on Aaron Burr's enemies list. So I'm not sure if you know, that's a problem or not, but...
Seriously, how old would Bernie be at this point?
Well, he'd be the oldest person ever elected president. Yeah. He'd be 70. He's 73 now. He's 75. He'd be 75 election day. And, of course, the oldest president was Ronald Reagan, mm-hmm. who was reelected for a second term when he was 73. But if you watch Bernie Sanders, was it yesterday or 2 days ago, to making the announcement official in Burlington, I mean, he's very energetic. He's full of fire, tons of stamina. But I mean, you know, something, but fair is fair. If you're going to mock the Republicans with Bob Dole and John McCain and Ronald Reagan, then of course there are people who will talk about Bernie Sanders' age as well. But you know, if you watch him on the stub, I mean, that's all that matters, really.
Oh, and if Joe Biden were to run it, I think that you could do the same thing to him with age, couldn't you?
Biden is, I think, 2 years older than Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton would be 69 if she was elected.
Yeah.
Biden would be 71. This is not a young Democratic field. And when you look at the Republican Party, you look at Marco Rubio, who's only 16. You have a lot of...
Seriously, how old is he?
He's young. Yeah, what a lot of Republicans are saying is that he, certainly better than Jeb Bush, could match up much better against Hillary Clinton, the old and the new, you know, the yesterday and tomorrow. So watch Marco Rubio.
Yeah. What about O'Malley? I understand that there's some of his backers are putting together a super PAC for him. Is he seriously considering this?
And he's not considering. He's announcing his candidacy on Saturday.
Okay.
He's going to announce his candidacy in Baltimore, where he served, you know, a mayor before he was elected governor. But there is a new debate going on in the entire community, let alone the Democratic Party, because when he was mayor, he was one of those no tolerance. Right. A campaign where if you were, you know, just, you know, loitering, you'd be arrested. If you were looked suspicious, you'd be arrested. And that was not too dissimilar from what Bill Clinton was doing when he was president and Hillary Clinton was first lady, all these mass incarcerations.
Yeah.
But now we've seen, you know, in Baltimore and all these other cities that have exploded, that one of the real resentments in the minority community is that the fact that the police would just, you know, stalk you and follow you and arrest you often for no real reason. And I think that could come back to hurt Martin O'Malley, even though he's trying to run to Hillary Clinton's left.
Ken, who else is out there on the horizon who might challenge Hillary? Is there anybody?
Well, everybody's talking about, not everybody's talking about, but Jim Webb, the former one-term senator from Virginia, is out there trying to make a go of it. Lincoln Chafee, the former Republican senator and independent governor of Rhode Island, is running against, mostly against Hillary, on her vote again on the war, supporting the war, whereas Lincoln Chafee, even though he was a Republican, opposed the war in Iraq from the beginning. But you know, I mean, it's not going to be the coronation everybody talked about, because I think Bernie Sanders has an appeal to the progressive wing, maybe the Elizabeth Warren wing of the Democratic Party. But given the fact that Hillary Clinton has so much money, they're talking about $2.5 billion. Given the fact that she is also represents history, as Barack Obama did in 2008, there's a history that Hillary Clinton brings to the table in 2016. So is she the clear favorite? Yes, but can Bernie Sanders and maybe Martin O'Malley cause mischief? I think that's certainly possible too. Mm-hmm. New Hampshire, they love their upsets, and Iowa, they love their, you know, there are a lot of liberal, committed liberals there. So let's not make predictions in May of 2015.
And is Elizabeth Warren pretty much just a no-go?
Gone. Yeah.
Well, yeah. She said no from day one. She's never wavered, of course. You know, those of us with long memories remember that Bobby Kennedy also said no, 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 until mm-hmm. Eugene McCarthy did so well against Lyndon Johnson in the 68 New Hampshire primary, right, that Bobby Kennedy said, maybe I'll run after all. I don't think that's going to happen, but wow. I mean, you know, there are a lot of people who, even though Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren still have that same progressive policies, there are a lot of Elizabeth Warren, you know, people who wish Elizabeth would run may not necessarily go to Bernie Sanders, but we'll see.
More political talk coming up, and you can join us with your questions and comments at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, along with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. You know, Ken, Hillary Clinton's not been talking to the press a whole lot lately. What do you think of that? Is that smart on her part with all that's swirling around her, or is this just going to compound the problem for her?
Well, as a journalist, and I consider myself a journalist, I am frustrated by the fact that there are so many questions that are out there that Hillary Clinton is just not answering. One of the biggest issues, one of the most pressing issues in the Democratic Party right now is what to do about these trade deals and giving the president, you know, authority, mm-hmm. trade authority to put together these trade deals. Hillary Clinton is asked over and over again, and she has not said whether she supports this or not. Obviously, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are very strongly against the Obama Pacific Rim trade deal. Yeah. But Hillary Clinton won't say a word. But having said that, let's just say, and then, of course, you know, how does she feel about the Iranian deal, the deal with Iran and nuclear weapons? She hasn't given a view on that either. How does she feel about the Keystone Pipeline? She hasn't given a position about that either. So that infuriates me as a journalist. And yet, having said that, what if in November of 2015, she says how she feels, and maybe it's after the fact, but do you think anybody will care that back in May she refused to give us opinions? So I don't know if it matters. I don't really know if it matters to voters.
I don't think it matters at this point. I mean, you know, it is infuriating, you know, especially if you're the reporters who are asking the questions. But in the long run, I mean, she is going to have to confront these things.
And she probably will, but look at something like Jeb Bush, who was very open and amenable to the press, who has 12 different answers on what to do about Iraq.
Exactly.
So I mean, you know, who's better off right now, Hillary Clinton or Jeb Bush?
Or Jeb Bush. Which brings me to the subject of Jeb Bush, and you're right, he's having a great deal of difficulty with this Iraq question, but then he's also, kind of taking indirect pot shots at some of the opposition. Is he the front runner, or is this thing just so muddled that you can't really call anybody the front runner? I know he is in terms of money, probably.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, if you're an describing a front runner, if you're describing a front runner who has gotten the most money, then of course that's Jeb Bush. But if you're looking at polls, and Jeb Bush usually tops the list of polls, but it's usually like 16% for Bush and 14% for Rubio. Right. To me, that's not a front runner.
It's like a tie or something, or a three-way tie.
I don't know if it's a tie or people just don't know. I mean, Jeb Bush has not had he's kind of rusty. He hasn't run for office since 2002. And I'm surprised that he's not as sure with his answers that I expected him to be. I mean, whatever you think about George W. Bush and all the bluster and all that stuff, he was still sure of everything he said, whereas Jeb Bush is seeming like he's thinking of the answers as he's giving them. And that's not what, voters want. They want somebody who's, sure of what they're talking about. So it's not a strong start for Jeb Bush, and there is no front runner.
And as you said, I mean, these are questions that you could anticipate. If your name is Bush and you were running for president.
Right, exactly. You could do what Hillary Clinton does. No, you can't do what Hillary Clinton does.
No, you can't cover up and just,
No, because right, you know something?
Go into a corner. But
if suddenly Elizabeth Warren was saying, something, I'm thinking about getting into this race, and then suddenly she gets 30, 40% in the polls, then I guarantee you that Hillary Clinton will be much more open about where she feels.
Absolutely.
But right now, with 60% and Bernie Sanders has minus 4%, then there's no reason for her to answer, and she's not answering anything.
Right.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Let's talk with Deb in Northside. Hi, Deb.
Hi. I'm a Democrat who's very disillusioned with Hillary Clinton, and frankly, I would love to see a draft Al Gore movement. Is there anything we know about Gore's willingness to serve?
Wow, I mean, no. I mean, of course, he's made like $300 million. He's a multimillionaire, which is pretty remarkable. And of course, he went through an uncomfortable divorce with Tipper. But it's interesting, when you ever see Bill Clinton together with another politician, it's usually with one of the Bushes, either George H.W. or George W. Bush. But he's never with his former vice president. And Gore seems to be very, I guess he was just so disillusioned and so disappointed what happened in 2000. He probably feels that the presidency was stolen from him. I mean, there are a lot of Democrats who probably feel the same. But he is not, he's not ever talked about coming back to public office.
I can guarantee you that man wakes up every morning and thinks, I should have been president. I was elected president. And it was taken away from me.
But like Ken was saying, he's done quite well. So you'd have to sit there and think, why would I ever want to put myself through that whole thing again?
Right. Exactly.
Let's talk with Richard in Clifton. Good afternoon, Richard.
Hi, this is Richard. I want to talk the other dynasty, Patrick Kennedy, Carolyn Kennedy. Is there any future for them? Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Well, I mean, of course, we talked about all the Kennedy dynasty. I mean, it's funny we're talking about the Clinton and the Bush dynasties, but it's funny that we're not talking about the Kennedy dynasty, which we always used to talk about. But there is, Joe Kennedy, who's a new congressman from Massachusetts. He won Barney Frank's House seat a few years ago. I think is he Bobby Kennedy's grandson? I think he is Bobby Kennedy's grandson.
Yes.
So there are, and of course, Kathleen Kennedy Townsend was thinking about running for the Senate in Maryland this year for the seat that Barbara Mikulski is giving up, but she didn't. And Caroline Kennedy, who's the ambassador to, she's the ambassador to the Vatican? No. Where is she? Something like that. She's in Italy, maybe. But anyway, I'm sorry. I should have known that. But she was talking about running for the Senate in New York a few years ago. But right now, the Kennedys who are in office or are coming up in office are the really youngsters. And maybe, down the road, there is more to be said about them. But, You know, Joe Kennedy, Bobby's son, quit the House in Massachusetts. Patrick Kennedy, who's Teddy's son, quit the House from Rhode Island. So if there's a Kennedy dynasty, it's going to be years from now, and these youngsters who are coming up right now.
But Ken, you think dynasties are still relevant today? I mean, one of the things that I keep hearing people murmuring under their breath is, you know, no more Clintons, no more Bushes. In other words, they're fed up with dynasties. So do they still work?
Go ahead, Howard.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, if you had a new generation of Kennedys who came up, who
a little
had
different
that
for that
of,
family, yeah,
that kind of, you know, and they had that kind of charisma that the, you know, the Kennedys have had in the past, and you know, I could see them reemerging at some point, but I think, as Ken says, I think it's down the road a ways.
Yeah, I do too, and I mean, of course. It's interesting that, I mean, for a lot of people who don't like Bill Clinton, they don't like Hillary Clinton, too. But it seems like if Jeb Bush weren't running, I don't think people would talk about the Clinton dynasties. I think people are saying it now because of the Bushes. And and given the fact that George W. Bush left the presidency with such low approval ratings and a disastrous war in Iraq on his resume, that I think that's part of the problem that Jeb Bush has to overcome if he's going to be the nominee and the next president.
Mm-hmm. 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation.
And don't forget the Rand Paul dynasty, because his father, Ron Paul.
Exactly, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Well, that's true.
You're right.
Do you see, speaking of Rand Paul, did you see the thing the other day where, I mean, he was suggesting that the Islamic State was created by military hawks in the Republican Party?
Well, there are a lot of people who say that Bush, I mean, I don't know about a lot of people, but there are certainly a lot of anti-war folks who say that what George W. Bush did in Iraq led to the creation of ISIS and the Islamic State.
Yes.
But it's interesting that Rand Paul would say it too. And I think that's one of the reasons Lindsey Graham is the only reason Lindsey Graham is going to run for president. He announces next week, and he'll do it basically to say that Rand Paul is wrong on defense. Remember that famous debate? It was in 2008 where Rudy Giuliani and Ran Paul basically were blasting each other over the over who's at fault for 9/11. Right. So there are a lot of people, I don't know what a lot means anymore, but there are a sizable number of people who are still talking about the disastrous move, the disastrous decision to go to war in Iraq and the consequences it brought.
You know, Ken, we were talking earlier about where things are headed on the Democratic side. Republican side just seems to keep getting bigger and bigger. How many candidates do you think they could possibly end up having?
Well, there are 8 official now. I mean, with Rick Santorum 2 days ago and yesterday and Pataki today, that's 8. You have Lindsey Graham and Rick Perry next week. That's 10. And then you still have Jeb Bush and Scott Walker and Chris Christie and John Kasich and Bobby Jindal and the heir apparent, Donald Trump. So, I mean, so that could be 15, 16. And that's one of the reasons why Fox News feel that's just too unmanageable to be on a debate stage. But for the first debate in a presidential cycle and to exclude nearly half the cast of characters, there has to be a better way of doing it, I think.
Yeah, there really does. I mean, what's the point of having it if you're, you know, only listening to half of the candidates?
Right. And a lot of people we know how debates are important. Once upon a time, Rick Perry was the front runner in 2012 until he, self-destructed with that oops moment in the debate. So debates are very instructive. What we learn about candidates and personalities and how they respond to pressure. I think we should all see them all.
Yeah, and it helps thin out a crowd, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, because sometimes, you know, the person performs badly, the money starts to dry up, they can't be a functional candidate anymore.
Yeah, I'm losing track of the GOP side, Ken. Has Rick Perry has not announced yet, has he?
No, Rick Perry announces next week. We have Marco Rubio, Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Mike Huckabee, Ben Carson, Carly Fiorina, and Santorum and Pataki. So that's the 8. Next week is Lindsey Graham and Rick Perry, and that's 10.
Yeah.
And then maybe another 6 or so who are seriously thinking about it.
Yeah, Ben Carson's the interesting one to me because he, if I'm... Correct me if I'm wrong, Ken, but he's the only one at this point who doesn't really have any kind of political background. Never really, you know, ran and got defeated or anything like that. He's pretty much, this is pretty much new territory for him, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But the problem with the first time candidate is you make a lot of rookie mistakes. And, and you know, last year, I mean, if he's sharpened his message a bit, but at a time he was talking, he said that same-sex marriage was comparable to pedophilia and bestiality, or at least even in the same sentence. He put in the same sentence. He said that Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, is the worst thing to happen to America since slavery. I mean, yeah. I know there are people who believe in these positions, but they are, to these ears anyway, seem to be a little bit outlandish. And if, you know, again, if you're trying to, I understand that you need to break out of a big, large Republican pack, but to say things that are just, you know, beyond the pale, that hurts you as well.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to be able to appeal to the mainstream Republican voters too.
Well, yeah, but as Ted Cruz says, I think we watched John McCain and Mitt Romney be moderate, mainstream yeah. Republicans, mm-hmm. and they got their heads handed
to
them.
Right. Well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk with Omar in Sycamore Township. Hi, Omar.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
I was wondering, what are the statistics showing about university students? Are they more inclined to vote for Hillary Clinton, or are they more inclined to vote someone closer to their age, like Marco Rubio? Hmm. Thank you.
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I know. I mean, when I was growing up, of course, all a lot of the students were Gene McCarthy people, and you know, anti-war right. folks. And then when Ronald Reagan ran in 1980, a lot of young people were attracted to the runner, even though he was the oldest guy ever elected president. He just had this appeal to many young people. Now, of course, we saw a lot of young people turned on in 2008 to Barack Obama, who was young and fresh and new. Hillary Clinton is not young and fresh and new, but she's of course, you know, if you ask me who the front runner for president is, if I had to give an answer, it would be Hillary Clinton. But I don't know where young voters are going. I think there are a lot of them, and there were a lot of them at Bernie Sanders' rally the other day in Burlington. Yep. And Bernie Sanders, as you know, is 73 years old,
sure.
and yet a lot of young people there. A lot of, maybe they were there for the Ben and Jerry's, but there were a lot of young people there.
Well, you know, it seems like in the past, Ron Paul attracted a lot of college age voters,
and now Rand
is in there, and I would think that he'd have the same potential.
Yeah. I don't think it's a matter of age of the candidate.
I agree.
I think it's a matter of the ideas
and that's a good point. And that's a good point about Rand Paul. I mean, he's talking about expanding the Republican Party, but he's also talking about issues like getting the government out of the bedroom, getting the government out of legalization of marijuana, and a lot of young. Boy, I said marijuana like I'm 75 years old, but I mean, nobody says marijuana. But anyway, it's like should we have equality with homosexuals? I mean, it sounds so archaic.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point is Rand Paul is speaking to a lot of issues that young voters care about.
Is that because he leans more libertarian, Ken?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Although, if you're a true libertarian, you are a little disappointed in what Rand Paul has been doing, because he knows that the majority view of the Republican Party is not where he is, especially with the rise of the Islamic State. So you hear him talking about more funds for the Pentagon, more foreign policy muscle, and that's not what Rand Paul was first elected on.
No, yeah, you are hearing him talk about that, and he talks about it in terms of, well, we're going to give more money to military, but we're going to take it away from somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, he's never been a fan of foreign aid, obviously, but of course, then when you start talking to him, well, what about Israel? And then everybody's so afraid of being considered anti-Semitic,
right.
So he would say, well, no, let me clarify that a little bit.
Yep.
Okay, Ken, so help me keep this straight so I know what to be looking for in the next week. Who's going to be jumping on the GOP side? Who, you were mentioning those earlier.
Next week is Lindsey Graham on June 1st and Rick Perry on June 4th. And then, of course, as Howard said, we expect John Kasich maybe the first week, second week of July.
Yeah.
And then we have all these other guys who are still waiting for a date.
Right.
And the Democratic side grows to 3 on Saturday with Martin O'Malley.
Okay, and I keep thinking, well, if you wait this long, it's almost too late.
Well, on the Democratic side, I don't think so. I think, you know, again, if it's a small field, you still have, I mean, you'll still have 8 months before the Iowa caucuses, which are on February 1st. And then you have, and then the week, 8 days later, you have the New Hampshire primary. So you still have 8 months, but In a Republican, see, the problem is now that you have a criteria, a litmus test to get into the debates, it's much, much more difficult on the Republican side. So you wonder about George Pataki, the former three-term governor of New York. He toppled Mario Cuomo. I mean, he was a very successful governor. He served three terms, which is pretty remarkable. And yet, nobody can remember who he is. Right. He hasn't run for office since 2002. And he's going to be 71 years old in 2016. And people say, you know, who is he?
You know, and we just got word in, Howard, that all the Kentucky counties now have now reported.
Yeah.
And the Kentucky Secretary of State will have an announcement at 2:30.
Yeah.
So stay tuned to WVXU for that. Ken and Howard, thanks for being here this afternoon.
Will the Secretary of State tell us who she voted for? Did she vote for Obama?
Political junkie Ken Rudin, WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. Today's program was produced by Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Bruce Ellis. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now on 91.7.